Welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies, the Talking Picture Podcast. I'm Neil Rosen, joined by Bill Bregoli.
When Neil said welcome, he actually outstretched his hands to people who can't see.
There you go.
And people who can see but just aren't here.
That's Bill McCuddy over there.
And this is Jack Rico.
From
Highly Relevant Podcast, showbizcafe.com.
Highly Relevant, the Highly Relevant Podcast. Boy, what
is a lot of pressure when you call yourself the Highly Relevant Podcast.
Yes, it's all highly relevant topics that we talk about at the podcast.
This is the Highly Irrelevant Podcast.
Well, soon to be relevant. Right?
We're going to be talking today about Suburbicon, the new movie that was directed by George Clooney and stars Matt Damon and Julianne Moore in two roles in the film, and Oscar Isaac. We're going to be talking about Thank You for Your Service, the Miles Teller film. Well, Bill Bregoli spoke to Miles Teller. We're going to hear from Miles Teller. We're going to hear from Matt Damon. And we're going to talk about this new television show that Bill McCuddy is all excited about called Mindhunter and Jack.
Well, streaming. It's on Netflix.
Okay. He's going to check in with that also. But let's start out talking about Suburbicon, which we all saw last night in the Paramount screening room. Here's what it's about.
By the way, there were a lot of old people in that room, and I'm going to include myself in that list, and somebody had eaten beans or something. So literally, the movie theater and the movie stank last night, as far as I'm concerned. I don't want to name names, but Sandy Kenyon was right behind us. Rex Reed was two rows in front of us.
Wow, I was at the screening for Thank You for Your Service. And I smelled curry during
guys, why are we talking about flatulence?
Because people
in
think
podcast.
It's a great job we have going to these private screening rooms, and often it's not. All right, sorry.
So Suburbicon. This movie kind of defies categorization as well as a description.
I think crap is a category.
Come on.
Let me tell you what it's about.
Listen,
first.
It's a noir dramedy. Okay, I like to describe it.
So Matt Damon. And Julianne Moore. Julianne Moore are married, and they have a young son, and it takes place in 1959, late 50s. The whole thing in the beginning sort of is kind of like, look at this suburban area. It's a funny setup.
It's a funny setup.
You know, and they're kind of like,
welcome to Suburbicon.
Right. It's
where
kind
everyone
of,
is
like,
white.
It's like Truman.
It's
right?
like a Levittown.
It is like the Truman Show.
Yes.
It's like a Levittown kind of suburban community that was built
for people around the country who don't know what that is. It was a series of tract houses that was built to lure people out of the city and into the country,
and for veterans that came back from World War II. And so it's a suburban community with 60,000 residents. And I'm not spoiling anything because it's in the trailer, and this is what happens in the beginning of the movie. They get vandalized. Some bad guys come in and. And wind up. Can I say what happens to the?
Something horrific happens.
They burglarize the house, and something horrible happens to Matt Damon and his family. Let's put it to you that way. And then there's another subplot that is working concurrently. With this, the main plot is Matt Damon's reaction to this. Trying to catch these guys, and what happens is twists and turns. But there's another plot that's going on with these African-American neighbors that move into this all-white neighborhood. And there are these kind of like Charlottesville, Virginia-type riots. They have a Confederate flag to get these black people out of the neighborhood. And I'm wondering if Clooney, who directed it, was kind of like... paralleling that, although
you wonder
but
that incident
with a sledgehammer, maybe
no, because that incident happened a number of months ago, and this movie had to have been filmed before that incident.
Well, and it was written way before that. This has been sitting on the shelf with Joel and Ethan Coen for like
Joel and Ethan Coen wrote it.
Yeah,
well, and
from what
Clooney
I understand, Grant Hesloff and George Clooney added the racial part of it themselves. That wasn't part of the.
Well, to make it more timely
Make it much more entertaining for some inexplicable reason. Listen.
So, can we talk about it?
Why we're here.
So I know.
And we're
going to
hear from Matt Damon in a moment.
Right. I know that Neil and Bill are going to be the antagonists.
No.
Yes?
No, maybe not.
Well, okay.
Just
guaranteed on Twitter that you were going to not like
it. Well, I never told Bill my opinion of the movie.
Get out of here.
I liked the movie.
You guaranteed it.
I was wrong.
Did you like the movie?
I liked it.
I liked it too.
I liked it. Now here, let me tell you why I liked it.
Tell me, and then I'll tell you why I liked it.
Number one,
please hear from Bill McCuddy.
Shit all over the whole thing. Yeah.
Let them speak, and then I'll tell you the truth.
Here's what I liked about it. First of all, I like these period movies, these sort of noir films that Clooney does. We saw it in Good Luck, Good Night, The Monuments Men, even though that wasn't necessarily
Confessions
a great film.
Of a Dangerous Mind.
Confessions
recaptured
of a Dangerous
the Gong
Mind.
Show from the 70s.
Absolutely. So he likes to time travel back in time and capture certain moments in history and sort of relive them for everybody else. I like that aesthetic about him. Grant Heslov is involved. Clooney, I believe, directed it. The Coen brothers did it. What I like about this is it combines this sort of dark noir film homage that they do so well with this sort of screwball comedy that it's very dark and black. And the performances I thought were great. Oscar Isaac is the one that sort of really sticks in my mind. Excellent. This dude just understands.
Oscar Isaac
reads the
is
room.
Always good. I have to
great,
tell you, whether you like the movie, that movies that he's in or whether you don't, and I happen to like that Coen Brothers movie that he was in where he kind of played that folk singer kind of guy. What was the name of that, Bill Bregoli?
Oh, I don't remember. I just remember.
Inside Llewyn Davis.
Llewyn Davis.
I kind of like that movie.
Coen Brothers,
people
too.
People didn't seem to like it. But
right.
Yeah, whether he's in Star Wars, which he's been in, a Star
Commercial,
Trek, which he's been
independent,
in.
Right. He
and
does just a fantastic job.
And that movie that he did where he, again, a period piece. I forgot the name of it.
Where he's married to Jessica Chastain and he's in the mob.
And he's like, wants
the
to
night,
buy like
the
an
night
oil,
something
like an
or
oil,
something.
Oil
no, that's
tankers.
The night manager from HBO, I think, is the
No,
manager.
No, I'm thinking
no,
of...
No, you're right. He's wants to, like, get a monopoly on oil,
right.
Playing
and
an
he's,
oil tanker
he's,
in
he's
Queens.
He's in bed with the mob, and Jessica Chastain is really the brains of the outfit. She's fucking unbelievable in that movie.
Yeah, she
owns it. He's
it's
not.
It's a flawed movie, but interesting.
Yeah, he makes
if
good
we
choices.
Think of the name of it.
But I don't think he made
Oscar's
a good choice
great.
This
so
time.
While you look for that, it's a very violent film for those of that you want to see it. But it's violent in the way, you know, sort of... you know, a lot of these absurdist premise movies are violent that you don't necessarily take them seriously.
Almost cartoony,
exactly. But one of the, I think the big thing that maybe, Bill, you might not sort of agree with is the racial sort of layers in the plot of this film. We're seeing a white American suburbia in America, and all of a sudden, it cuts to this African-American family in the 50s and how much this white community hates black people, essentially. And so they go back and forth on it, and obviously it's used as a metaphoric tool. It's not meant to be linear in any single way. So I think ultimately what the movie shows is, look how America, yesterday and today, we have such hateful people. And nothing has changed whatsoever since the 50s. And I think that was the point that Clooney was trying to make with the Coen brothers.
But a screwball comedy is not the place to do that. And by the way, you called it a dramedy, you called it a comedy.
I didn't call it anything.
I was in a group. I was
I
in a room
a
with what would
because
say
I laughed,
there, 45
but at the same
or 50
time,
people.
It was dramatic.
I can count three laughs in the whole movie.
Okay,
by anybody. And let me just say one other thing about the
darkly
racial,
satirical
the racial
the tone.
The racial
tone
story that's shoehorned into this movie is completely tonality off from the rest of the film and almost reprehensible to watch. There's
why
absolutely
reprehensible,
because it's just vile. It's just absolute pure vile. And it's Clooney trying to say, look what's happening to America. It's only going to get worse under Donald Trump. I don't disagree with any of that, but I don't think this is the place for it.
Okay. So you don't like the execution, but you do like the concept.
I felt bad for African Americans watching the movie with us. I almost left in the middle of it, except I was sitting between both of you people. And I just really, really don't like this movie.
So, look, first of all, the movie, the Oscar Isaac movie that I did look up, is called The Most Violent Year.
Yes.
Most Violent Year, not Night.
Now,
right.
That said, what I liked about the movie, what I didn't like about the movie is the subplot with the African-American family that lived in the neighborhood. I think that made
it
the movie...
It made you uncomfortable, admit it.
No.
But that's what movies are supposed
to
do.
I think it didn't gel. Like, 80% of the movie is this Matt Damon, Julianne Moore with the kid and the these... burglars, whatever you want to call them.
It's sort of a con heist criminal film.
It reminded me, since it was written by the Coen brothers, there's elements of it that are very Fargo-esque in terms
absolutely.
Of the crime.
Or Raising Arizona, I think, is closer in tone.
That's being set up. And it's twisted and satirical and dark, and it's not funny, ha-ha, like, you know, like Porky's. You know what I mean?
It's comical in tone.
Right. It's comical in tone. I thought that the...
But it has Selma in it.
I thought that the... Right.
It's Raising Arizona with Selma
right,
every 10
other,
minutes.
This other subplot
right.
with the black family in the neighborhood and how everybody... There's a scene where the woman goes into a supermarket and they want to overcharge it for every single item. It's better if you shop for somewhere else. That's a movie unto itself, and I don't think... It's given short shrift. It doesn't belong in this movie. It makes this movie scattered and, you know,
repulsive.
Think, I mean, it's like I'm kind of laughing at the absurdity of this Matt Damon stuff and all these
right.
wacky characters, and Oscar Isaac visits Julianne Moore and they have it's a very interesting scene.
Great scene.
I'd like to talk to your husband about some insurance. And he goes, well, I'd like to talk to, Matt Damon's character was, about some insurance. He's not home right now. No, let me just come in and talk to you. And there's a very interesting. So there's all these weird
right.
scenes with the son,
The son's great.
Yeah. It's just all these wacky,
all the performances
and I'm
were
saying
good.
It's Coen Brothers
seeing.
Wacky. It's just like the sensibility is just it's just bizarre.
Neil,
and
there's
funny.
A reason the Coen Brothers didn't make this movie for 20 years.
So, well,
even they know a bad script when they see it, and they wrote it.
Well, so you know, it's not laugh out loud funny. It's kind of ironic funny, twisted funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that the subplot about the racial tensions in the 50s. Just didn't gel with the rest of the movie.
But
that's
I
a movie,
understood
that's a
where
movie
they were going.
That's
so,
a movie.
So,
it's not subtle, and that's another movie unto itself.
Listen,
but,
I'm not going to say that this is a gem by any means or that
no, but,
this
but
is a
wait.
Movie that should be acclaimed in any way.
One of the
but
worst movies of the year.
I understood.
No,
no
I
mean, we've seen some terrible movies this year.
But I
this
like,
doesn't come that close.
I liked the Matt Damon... Which constitutes, again, about 75 to 80%
But the part you don't like stops you, doesn't it? It stops
the
you in the
thing
movie.
Is 75 to 80% of the movie, and I found that to be interesting
third,
and wacky, and I
way.
Liked it. The part that I didn't think gelled wasn't like, oh, my God, this is awful. I mean, it's like, okay.
So
I don't
you're recommending it?
I'd say.
So you're recommending
it. Yeah, if you're a Coen Brothers fan, I think it's, yes, I would.
How many apples?
Yeah,
1 to 5, I guess.
I'd
right?
go. No, it's
this
1 to 4.
1 to 4.
1 to 4.
I'd go. Well, for me personally,
2.5.
Yeah, I'd say 2.5. I'd say for me personally, I personally enjoyed it to the point of a 3. But if I was rating it like I used to do on New York 1 for the general public, I'd probably give it 2.5 or 2 3/4, which
that's
I've done occasionally.
By
that's
the way, if you think if you think George Clooney is trying to do some parable about today, they build a fence around the black family's house.
Well,
I mean, how much more obvious is any of this
well,
have to be?
Well, the Confederate
not,
flag was also, you know, like.
Right.
Well, I thought I turned to Bill during the movie when they were having
and
those
he kept
riots.
Saying, what's going on? I don't understand
no,
this.
No, I said it's Charlottesville. I said this is Charlottesville.
Exactly. So yeah. we knew what
but
they were trying to do.
But it had to be
the
movie
execution.
For that.
But it had to be.
This
written.
Is not the movie
you just,
for that
no,
message.
But,
yeah, I agree with Bill.
Listen,
on that.
I thought it was a curveball. As soon as I started seeing the black family move into the building, into the neighborhood, I said, where is this going? Mm. So it wasn't until like the very end that they kept on sort of throwing back to it that this was a parallel to today's America and how nothing has changed. And I thought that was the point. So if that was the point, then I got it. I move on. I enjoyed the rest. 70,
I should have moved on
five.
10 minutes.
No, I agree with Bill that the sensibility of that doesn't gel with the sensibility of the rest of the movie. One is a really serious topic that's not funny at all.
Right.
And the Matt Damon thing is satirical and dark and weird and
well,
kind of
speaking
humorous.
Of Matt Damon.
Speaking of Matt Damon, Bill Bregoli
happens to have a soundbite of Matt Damon.
Welcome to the Country Club. I've just teed him up.
That's right. And Matt Damon talked about working with his good friend and pal, George Clooney.
This is the 7th movie that I've done with George. Because he's great and it's a lot of fun and like what's the what else is the point if we work because we love our job and it's when we feel lucky to do it and it's just more fun when you're doing it with your friends.
You know, you work with George Clooney that long and basically whatever he says when he picks up the phone and calls you, you'll do. I mean, but they cannot have had the kind of fun they had on Ocean's movies or
no
any
way.
Of the other things
absolutely.
They've done. Even Monument Men, which I think is a flawed movie, but
it is.
But I liked it. This is just sad. This is just sad, I think. And look, I don't know if it's going to make any money. I don't think it is. I think I think on Rotten Tomatoes, it's something like 20 or 25%.
Critics hate it.
Owen Gleiberman is in the ads. He rarely allows himself to be used in the advertising campaign. He's with Variety. I have a lot of respect for him. He loves this movie and thinks it's clever. And I get that it's trying to be a dark, noir-y kind of dramedy that you're calling it, but I think it's a complete
misfire. It's interesting. I'd recommend it. But it's a peculiar taste. I don't think everybody will like it.
I think it's going to be universally hated.
There's a lot of connections on this. I mean, you know, Oscar Isaac starred in the Coen Brothers movie inside of Llewyn Davis, and like Matt said in The Bite, he was working with Clooney, and they've worked together tons of times.
That's for the DVD extras. Right. That's not for the movie.
The only thing about this film in particular...
Has she worked with any of these guys before?
With Matt Damon, absolutely.
No, with Clooney or the Coen Brothers?
Well, I'm sure they have.
Yeah, I'm sure they have. But one thing...
She's in two roles.
If
you really want to talk something about this movie that was very obvious to me from the beginning that just didn't jive in any way, is I never fully understood why Matt Damon and Julianne Moore plays two characters, basically a twin sister. Mm. So she's plays both roles.
And one's in a wheelchair.
Why does Matt Damon hate his wife, the first Julianne Moore?
It's a spoiler, but I don't care if nobody sees this.
Oh, I know that.
So she has a car accident, and he's responsible, and she's the reminder of that every day. Plus,
yeah,
he
but
probably
that wasn't necessarily so.
He can't stop her on the ping pong table like he does as the sister.
And I
nobody
think
acts
he's
like
gotta
that,
think,
man.
He's gotta think,
now you'll go see it. I regret that comment.
He obviously has a thing for the sister. I thought that was kind of apparent.
They look exactly alike.
And then she gets her hair blonde, dyed blonde.
Yeah. So I mean, if you like one, you have to like the other. Come on.
Let's move on. So Bill Bregoli saw a movie that...
we'll get to hear from him now.
Yes. They're called Thank
that's
You.
That's right. I was on assignment last night, remember?
Yeah, that's right.
We're doing something we're going to...
Well, Bill Bregoli and I both saw last night, which we're going to talk about next week. I'll tease this, is the documentary on Gilbert Gottfried, and we'll talk about that next week. But Bill did see Thank You for Your Service, which stars Miles Teller, and
that's
tell
right.
us...
Haley Bennett.
How was
about,
it?
About
Does this
movie,
break
Bill?
The Miles Teller streak? After Whiplash, he's made four really lousy movies four commercially unsuccessful movies.
Fantastic
I didn't think they
four.
Were. I didn't right. think the Divergent 2 and the what was he a boxer in the blood thing?
Oh yeah,
which I thought he was good in actually.
Yeah,
the
really
True Life Story.
Yeah.
He's a
very
great
good.
Actor.
He was very good. In
somebody
that.
Said he's our generation or this generation's not our generation's. We're too gone. But it's this generation's. De Niro.
You
like
think
he could
you,
like
what?
He could turn into
now.
De Niro. Yeah.
You think
wow, who said
well,
that?
Look at a young De Niro.
I mean, I could mention
Jeffrey Wells said it on Hollywood Elsewhere.
So you would consider the Divergent films to be flops?
Yeah, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't make
yeah,
the
not even
base,
do it.
Box office wise
against what they cost.
Wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, he was totally just like
he was wasting.
By the way, that boxing
that.
Movie that you're talking about, which is a very good movie about this,
but crippled, didn't make any dough.
Crippled boxer who I mean,
Pazienza.
What's that?
Yeah. Vinny Pazienza.
Yeah. What was the name of the film?
It has blood in it.
Something. Yeah.
Blood for me. Bleed.
Bleed for me or something. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Bleed for me.
Bleed for this.
So anyway, you talked to Miles. Well, tell us about the movie.
Let me tell you about the movie first. It's about a group of veterans who come back from Iraq, and there's a short sequence where you see some bad things happening to them in Iraq. And Miles Davis's character,
Miles Teller, Miles Davis is in this.
Damn, he's
wow.
back.
He is
Miles.
So fucking hip.
Wow.
Is he a
that
CGI Miles Davis?
The hologram Teller's character. His job while we were in Iraq was to ride shotgun, which means he's in the passenger seat, and he basically looks at all the garbage in the streets. Because that's
for
where
intel,
they, where they hide the
literal garbage.
That's how the Inquirer gets most of its stories.
Yeah, that's why in New York there's no garbage cans in the corner. Sometimes they're in like parades or things like that.
Right, because that's where they hide the IEDs. And
women don't get pregnant. Oh no, that's IUD.
That's where they hide the IEDs. And he gets back home with his buddies. They're all kind of, the old term was shell-shocked, and now we call it PTSD, but they're all looking for help. When he goes out driving with one of his buddies later in the movie, he goes, there's a lot of trash on the road here. And the guy says, you're still looking for bombs, aren't you? They have a lot of trouble relating to the women in their lives. They go to the VA and ask for help, and the VA is sympathetic to all these guys. They don't come off as real bad guys, but they tell them, well, there's a six-month wait before you can get your treatment. The guy's like, I need help now. I want to kill myself. And it's very well done. The acting is great. Haley Bennett plays his wife, and she's really somebody to watch, too. She's terrific.
This sounds to me, Bill, like a movie that we've seen many versions of this. And again, I'm sorry that the title escapes me on this, but there was a movie, it might have been with Matt Damon, with two brothers, and he keeps coming back. And
Saving Private Ryan. Each
time the brother comes back, he's more...
With Matt Damon?
Maybe it wasn't Matt Damon, but each time the brother comes back, he's more and more disturbed about...
Welcome to the old people's podcast.
No, about...
We have no idea what we're talking about.
These tours of duty keep taking a toll on him. His wife is very supportive. But then he just keeps coming back more fucked up, basically, each time he does another tour of duty.
And it speaks... it sounds to me like the movie really explores sort of how vets come... the vets in the United States, right?
Yeah. It's one of these movies that's really well done, but commercially, I don't think it's going to do a whole lot.
One critic said Iraqi wars are like medicine. Nobody in America wants to see that right now. There has to be some time to pass. But you like the film. You
would you'd
recommend it?
But I would recommend it, yeah, if for the acting, if nothing
else. I like what you said about the VA hospital not being treated like a cliche, like a big corporation. That said, I think they probably do have to wait 6 months, which seems reprehensible to me. But everything's striking me as reprehensible today.
The waiting room scenes, they show those little signs to say, now serving with the number that you take. Mm-hmm. And the number's like 239, 238. And there are these extras, and I'm sure they're careful enough to hire real
vets. Sounds to me like a social issue film.
Who are amputees?
Amputees is a guy emptying his colostomy bag into a bottle. It's pretty.
The movie I was talking about was Brothers, and it was with Jake Gyllenhaal and Tobey Maguire and Jessica.
Often confused for Matt Damon. So, did you speak to?
Actually, Miles Davis.
Miles
Davis. I gotta tell you, you pulled off a lot of successful interviews in your day, Bill.
I tell you,
interviewing Miles Davis.
Miles Teller.
Write something.
Miles Teller talked about wanting to do right for the vets.
It's not World War II. No one's coming back to a ticker tape parade, and a lot of these guys are kind of the forgotten soldiers when they get back. But I think people watch this and feel like, what can we do to help?
So do you think you've seen this movie? Did you like the movie?
I liked the movie. I thought it was really...
What did you like about it exactly?
That it was well acted. There was no... I mean, these guys are all hurting, but there's no super overacting kind of scenes where you see like Oscar clip.
No
over the top, but...
It sounds like the Hurt Locker, if he stayed home and didn't re-up and go back.
Yeah, it's a lot like that, really.
Yeah.
And there are other characters. There's a black character who gets in with the wrong crowd and...
Over there or back
no,
here?
No, back here. He gets in with the wrong crowd. At one point, he's walking on the road with no shoes on. It just kind of shows you how... quick, maybe it was because it's a movie, but how quick the spiral down can be for some people.
But he's good in it.
Yeah, he's good.
How do you think it'll do?
I think he's like the easier to deal with Shia LaBeouf.
How do you think
I hear he's a jerk, though.
Yeah. How do you think it'll do? And do you think it's going to be
Oscar bait? I don't think it'll do
Oscar
great.
Bait?
Perhaps.
His performance, do you think it'll get any buzz?
It's such an ensemble kind of film, though.
Okay.
It weakens it a little bit.
Right. Sort of dilutes
Iraqi war, box office poison. Yeah. Trust
me. So how many apples on my Big Apple rating scale would you give it out of 1 to 4?
Do I have to license your Big Apples?
I'm going to give you permission to.
It'll all come out in the trial.
I'd give it 3.
You'd give it 3? Wow. Yeah. So we got
Wow, it's better than Suburbicon.
Yeah, well, definitely.
There you go.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So we all got an email from Bill McCuddy this week, urging us all to watch this movie.
I got the nod from everyone else. Everybody who has Netflix is coming up to me and going, have you guys watched Mindhunter yet? And so, I said,
check it
out. Well,
there was a huge article, as I said, that I read, a full-page article on Sunday.
How long did that take you?
On Mindhunter. Yeah, it's getting a lot of buzz, and it sounds very interesting, but why don't you tell everybody?
David Fincher is the guy who did Zodiac, and this has a very Zodiac kind
of
vibe to it. Yeah, this is on Netflix, and basically, I think the way they pitched it was they went in and said to Netflix, how would you like a 10-episode series on how the term serial killer was coined? And they were like, what do you mean? And then they said, well, there was an FBI unit, which is true, that started teaching other local law organizations how to track and find killers based on the psychology of what's going on and the ones that they currently have. So they try and interview Charles Manson. I won't tell you if they get to
Isn't
him or
Isn't it about
not.
One guy?
They
though,
get,
this one...
No, it's a team. It's a group of people put together. it's really fascinating. It works at its own pace. You have to stay with it.
So they're getting into the heads of the serial killers.
Right, they interview them, which had never been done before. In fact, wasn't allowed before these guys came along.
So it's kind of like, what was the motivation behind Son of Sam?
In order to find other serial killers in the making. So as they go to towns and interview these bad, you know, as I said, they try and get Charles
well,
Manson.
That sounds very Silence
They get
the
Richard
Land.
Speck. It is very.
Yeah,
but imagine
actually,
Clarice.
That's a great
imagine if Clarice was
comparison.
Interviewing him. And while she's in Baltimore interviewing Dr. Lecter, she comes out and a local law official says, can I ask you a question? And then they have a case for her. And then she, in the
but
course
Lecter,
of this 10
Lecter
series.
Was kind of helping her in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's very much like that,
yeah.
Except it predates all of that.
Oh, okay.
So this allows for Silence of the Lambs because that happened after this. This is literally where they coined the term in the 60s
so why and 70s. Is it called serial killer?
Because that's the term they came up with.
Hmm. Okay. Nothing to do with breakfast cereal.
No, it's spelled differently.
Yes, I know that. I shouldn't try to be funny like you, Bill.
No, keep doing it. It's amusing. Anyway,
yes.
I saw all 10 episodes. Jack saw the premiere.
What do you think of the premiere, Jack?
Listen, it's a Fincher. It's a Fincher direction, directorial. So immediately to me, I think David Fincher is one of the best directors in Hollywood.
Fincher did Zodiac, right?
Yes,
so
but not
right.
only that.
As I mentioned earlier.
He did Gone Girl. I mean, he does anything that's thriller related. I believe he's
attracted
the king.
To this subject matter.
Yes. And what I was expecting, though, was a lot more, let's say, action. But it's really more of a study on serial killers, except it's done so well. It
it's
reminds
kind
of like me of that True Detective on HBO.
True Detective, yeah, or
Netflix.
Yeah, so if you watch HBO's True Detective with Matthew McConaughey, where, you know, he was acclaimed like one of the best actors ever, you can kind of stretch that out into these 10 episodes. Very well done. I wouldn't say it's True Detective quality, but I think it's as close to a True Detective in terms of filmmaking, in terms of script, in terms of everything. You said it might be the best television show right now, right?
Well, I think it's certainly the most buzzed about, and I understand the buzz. Bill's seen 5. I like your comparison to Masters of Sex.
Yeah.
Except, sadly, there isn't much sex in this. Although, actually, he has a very beautiful
really,
girl.
Yeah,
Bill to Masters of Sex?
Yes.
In terms
How
of
so?
The studying there's of sex, sex, but they study of yeah. murderers.
Right.
You know, I watched the first...
Walk him through this slowly,
I watched the first season of Masters of Sex, and I thought Michael Sheen and... who's the woman who plays...
Lizzie Kaplan.
Yeah. I thought it was great. And then I started watching the second... I don't know what season they're in now.
Oh, yeah, they lost it in the second season.
I couldn't get through the second season. It really jumped the shark, you know?
Yeah. Well, this, as I said, this is kind of like that in that it's about people studying something.
Okay. So, did you like it?
It's less of a murder mystery and more of a...
What's your take on it?
Right. I liked it. I liked it enough to watch 5 episodes over...
Yeah, I'd be willing to watch the whole season, too.
So it kept me
You know
awake.
What it is?
Absolutely.
It's the headline here is it's a whydunit. And that's the whole point of the series.
Exactly.
If that interests
whodunit,
you,
that's a
if
good
you
way
watch,
of...
you know, my wife watches ad nauseum all these datelines. it was a good night for him. Or
it's
was it?
It's very macabre
it's like,
for people
it's
to
very,
like that, yeah.
She loves these crime thriller things, and people watch tons of the CSI and stuff. This is where it all began, so I recommend it for that reason.
I do want to talk about a Netflix show called The Day I Met El Chapo, the Kate Del Castillo story. Have
the
you guys heard about this?
The Day I Met...
El Chapo.
Oh, El Chapo.
El Chapo. So Sean Penn recently was in the headlines.
Yes.
Who was...
And he had... The woman...
He threatened Netflix and says, if you...
Right.
Put this out...
Apparently Sean Penn slept with this woman who also...
No. Here, let me give you a...
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So wait, I like Neil's version better.
But it's alternative facts, though. So
she's claiming that.
Rolling Stone put out an article April of last year where Sean Penn and Kate Del Castillo, which is a very famous Mexican actress who played in The Queen of the South, Reina del Sur, on Telemundo, biggest novella in history. The number one novella in history. And she played a female cartel boss. She had a fascination with El Chapo, and somebody said, "Do you want to meet him?" So She's like, yes. So she had met him before. Sean Penn wanted in to do an article, and he thought that that would be his journalism facet, you know, in his life. So he got together with Kate Del Castillo, and they both went and met El fucking Chapo. So they write an article about it. This has been extremely controversial. The FBI got involved.
Her and him wrote the article together.
Just Sean. Oh, okay. She went in along for the ride. So now, Diane Sawyer, I believe, about maybe once the article came out, Diane Sawyer landed an exclusive interview with Kate, which was the access for Sean Penn. And she didn't really say much in the interview. It was very vague and ambiguous. Now Netflix is doing a 3-episode series in detail about how Kate Del Castillo to meet El Chapo with Sean Penn. And it's very explicit on how that was. And I think Sean Penn, some stuff that's there in the 3-episode series on Netflix is stuff that he doesn't want people to know.
Oh, cool.
So
who plays Penn?
It's more like a documentary. It plays off like a documentary series.
So did they shoot footage when they met El?
No, I think this is just sort of her story. Uh-huh. So it's just like sort of interviewing her for 3 episodes. And then
she was like a newscaster. She was like a model or actress.
And an actress,
supposedly Chapo was like a huge fan of hers.
Because of that Reina del Sur
and
on
Telemundo. That's how Penn
show.
Got there, because he was bringing the chick.
Yes.
So it's like a Harvey, if it's like
he
if Harvey Weinstein
to
went to the Peninsula Hotel and wanted to get in to see Bill Clinton,
yeah.
He brought a hooker.
Right. It was
which
like,
I'm sure has happened on many occasions.
Well,
sue us, Harvey.
Again, so it should be an interesting, it's only 3 episodes, so it's not that much time.
Have you not seen it?
No. I just saw probably half of it before I got here, and it's interesting. I think it's really about the information. It's more investigative journalism in this particular case.
And how stories
and
get
sort
to
of
be
fill
stories.
In, and fill in the gaps, you know, right. If you're interested in El Chapo, Sean Penn, and Kate.
There's this article, and again, I don't know that this is true, because it came from...
Let's spread it anyway.
No, but here's the article. The article says that I slept with Sean Penn while filming El Chapo docuseries.
So maybe that was post after they met, but
or maybe it'll
pretty...
get to that. You've only seen the first half.
Yeah.
You mentioned that Penn doesn't want a lot of things exposed. Maybe this is one of them.
Yeah, so if they did sleep, this was post after they met El Chapo, and it's on page 6, so I'm not sure how much credibility
that's
it
what
has.
I'm saying. I don't know if it's true or not, but she...
Hey, page 6 is fine.
But it could, well, I mean...
No, I saw it, and she's cute.
I don't know. Yeah, she's beautiful, so who the hell knows? But according to this article...
It happened. All right.
Yeah,
so
whatever. Who cares? No. Who cares whether they slept here?
We have our documentary. We have the Critics' Choice Documentary Awards coming up next week. And Jack was telling me one of the nominees that he's particularly bowled
Icarus.
Over by is Icarus, which is. Have you guys seen that?
Have you guys seen this? Oh, my God.
Neil, someone's
like,
talking to you. Have you
I
seen
have
Icarus?
I have not seen.
It's okay, like a Mission Impossible.
We have to wake Neil up every now and then.
No,
Here's a quick premise. Basically, a guy sets out to do a Super Size Me, but instead of McDonald's and food, does it with doping and human growth hormone. He wanted to sort of replicate what Lance Armstrong used for those 7 titles at the Tour de France. So he says, well, if he can do it, let me do it and see how it works. That's how the movie begins. Half an hour into it, it becomes a whole different movie because it's a documentary. They find out that the gentleman that was helping him dope is actually being prosecuted by the FBI and basically by every single organization that's involved in sports. So he becomes the number one guy, and this is the guy that's helping him dope. So the movie then becomes about this gentleman, this Russian doper, that's helped every athlete, every Russian athlete, become basically superhuman. And so we go through this, like, thriller.
This is opening Friday? Or this is...
Icarus is on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
I'm sorry.
And it's going to be at the docuseries award show that's happening
next
week.
And it's one of our nominees.
So the movie ultimately is... as real as it can possibly be.
Sounds great.
This is amazing. I had knots in my stomach throughout the whole thing because this man now is in the witness protection program, and we see it in real time how all of this happens. It goes all the way up to Putin. So when you start seeing how Russia is so involved in how Russians cheat in the Olympics, and they still allow them to be part of the Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and now the FIFA World Cup, Sochi, and et cetera, et cetera, it leaves no doubt that Russia was involved in the United States election because of the ability to hack, the ability to persuade authorities, and the ability to just kill people.
Is this a multi-part doc series or is it a one-shot, Jack?
Trump was doping.
Right?
Is it a one-shot, like a two-hour documentary?
It's a two-hour documentary.
Okay.
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
That's why it's nominated for our documentary.
Last year was the first year of the Critics' Choice Documentary Awards. I was very impressed. I mean, a lot of things went on to win, you know, get nominated for and win Oscars. And I'm looking forward to this one as well. And this Icarus thing sounds very interesting.
What sounds interesting to me about it is how many times have we had documentaries where they start to do one thing and in the middle, organically, something else happens?
Lance Armstrong,
the Snowden
documentary.
Like all the way back to Thin Blue Line with Errol Morrison. Like they're there to do one story and another story evolves.
A better story arises. Yeah.
And that's when they get what they get.
And what do you want to mention?
So Bill and I ended up bumping into a theater in New York for a movie called Marjorie Prime with Lois Smith, John Hamm, Gina Davis, and Tim Robbins. And this is an interesting film. I don't even know how to describe it. It's about a woman, I believe, has Alzheimer's, but she has Alzheimer's in the future. And so when someone passes away, they're replaced by
an
avatar.
People will still have it in the future. And when you die, you can get your husband or your wife or your loved one as an avatar called a prime, and that person can live with you. Sort of like Alexa now.
Sort of like a replacement. That way,
what does that have to do with
eases.
Alzheimer's, though?
Well, because this woman, Lois Smith, in the movie, she suffers from a great performance, and they're
so
touting
she could
her
download
as,
her brain before
no.
it has the Alzheimer's.
So she has Alzheimer's.
When she passes,
the kids can replace her with this thing called a prime, which is an avatar. It's like a robot.
Of her pre-Alzheimer's.
Of her.
Well, in this case, she gets her husband back. Her husband has died years before her, but she chooses to have her prime be her husband when he was young, when they met. So that's what John
Hamm
plays.
John Hamm,
so John Hamm is this robot fixture in her life.
Like a younger
version of
her
husband. Knows all about her life and keeps her company.
The name
and
of the movie again
setup.
Is
Marjorie Prime.
And when is it opening?
I'm not sure exactly.
In a couple of weeks.
In a couple of weeks, but
is it good?
Well, that's the thing. I don't read.
It's
think
really
of Black
fascinating.
Mirror. Think of Black Mirror.
Yeah, it's like an episode of Black Mirror. I can recommend it.
Here's the problem.
She may win an Oscar for it.
Yeah, she may. So I think that the performances are great, Neil. But the story in itself, it just doesn't really go anywhere.
It was a play.
It was a play.
Stagey in a way.
Very stagey. Very theatrical. It's like 2 hours of dialogue, and I don't feel it really pushes you to go somewhere with the film. I think it just kind of. It stays in the center and it doesn't really go forward. And that
but
was
we had
my
a
only
lovely
issue.
Lunch with her afterwards. Blythe Danner was there, who I've always had a crush on as a kid,
along with
which
Anthony
I admitted
Edwards.
To her. And Anthony Edwards sat with us. And Lois,
I didn't get invited to this.
Yeah, that's why I said it was a nice luncheon.
And Bill Margoli.
It's a Peggy Siegel luncheon, and I'll tell you, I learned yesterday why we're getting fewer invitations to these dinners and lunches. The Academy is being extremely stringent about whether or not you can support a movie with a seated lunch. It doesn't. That's why they're not. We went and it was a buffet yesterday.
Yeah,
that's technically not considered a seated lunch, and it has to be. It was a lovely
What's
restaurant.
What's the problem with seated lunches?
It's considered graft. It's considered quid pro quo. The woman who puts these together by the name of Peggy Siegel, who we all know very well.
It's one of the iconic publicists in the Hollywood business.
I'd have to say probably I know her better than everybody else. But anyway, the point is, no, I'm kidding. She's behind all this stuff, and she has to go by the letter of the law in the Academy. The restaurant can't be further than like 1,000 feet. It has to be close to the screening room. So there's all
like
these restrictions they're putting on. Yeah, and this was right next door. But that was fascinating. And I said to Lois, who, by the way, if she wins an Academy Award at age 87, which is what she'll be next week, she'll be the oldest living actress to win an Oscar. And when she was asked about that, she said, well, let's make history. And everybody applauded. It was a nice moment.
It's a great moment.
And I asked her about sexual harassment in Hollywood and whether or not she was. Well, this is a woman who's worked with East of Eden and 60 years she's been making movies.
Listen to the story, because it's the way he says it to Lois.
And I said, so you had John Hamm in the movie. Was there a casting couch involved? And she got a big kick out of that. So did everybody around me. So that was
James Toback, the latest.
I just saw him at Tavern on the Green looking like an
unmade bed. James
like
Toback is a walking unmade bed.
And this man has diabetes. He has, you know,
That cracks me up about him. He says, I couldn't do these things. I'm a diabetic. I'm like, okay.
Let me tell you, the best line.
I think they have penises.
The best line that I've heard.
By the way, the number has risen to about 150 or something like that.
With Toback with Harvey Weinstein?
With Toback, yeah.
Well, you know, if you watch his movie, The Pickup Artist, you know.
It's all there.
There's no secret. Exactly. There's no, you know, he's not hiding anything.
He tells it all, yeah.
But not to condone this at all, but I mean, like, it was out there many years ago with Robert Downey Jr. who starred in that movie. But the best line I heard about this whole Harvey Weinstein thing, I read this thing that Nathan Lane, who apparently didn't get along with Harvey Weinstein very well at all, said that all these people right now who are just so surprised, they knew all about this for years.
Quentin
just
Tarantino,
right.
Damon.
He goes, it's like Claude Rains in Casablanca when he's told by the Nazis to shut down Rick's Place because it's a casino. Uh-huh. And he goes, I'm shocked that there's gambling going on here. And then somebody comes over to him and says, you're winning, sir. He goes, oh, thank you very much. You know? So, I mean,
Nathan Lane
said that, and I thought that was brilliant because everybody knows this.
Several years ago, there's a video that
horrible, but you know,
that just surfaced of Barbara Walters talking to Corey Feldman on The View. This was televised live. And he basically said that there's people that are pedophiles and they're sexual abusers. Corey Feldman,
Corey Feldman
to Barbara Walters at
The
View.
Well, there's a whole Corey Feldman, Corey Haim, they were trying to come out and
so
talk
when they were kids,
that.
They were sexually abused.
Yes.
And that there's many producers there. Now, he didn't say anybody by name, but Barbara Walters was very, very explicit in the show saying, you know, you could be taking down a whole industry. So she got backlash from that. And that is a great example of how many people just covered it up because you play with a celebrity.
Why
wouldn't
they
name Bush?
Why if Barbara Walters is doing that interview, why wouldn't Corey Feldman?
Because he knew just by her reaction.
Why couldn't he say the name? Why couldn't he say the name?
Because it wasn't the place and time for it. And that he also said...
Also, you accuse somebody of being a pedophile, you better be able to absolutely 100% prove it.
Right. So I'm not sure
an age of consent actress can come out and say, Harvey Weinstein tried to masturbate in front of me, and that's a little different than when I was 9, a man touched me inappropriately.
That's the death penalty, my friend, in some states. So...
Right. By the way, speaking of Toback, I have a very good friend in the Hamptons. I won't mention her name, but she said 3 years in a row on 3 different occasions, Toback came up to her almost word for word out of The Pickup Artist and did the exact same thing. I couldn't help but notice you. Not you have the body of a Botticelli and the face of it, but
yeah,
he
but
was
that's
like,
in the picture.
That was
says,
his scheme.
Hey, I'm a famous director, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Would you like, yeah, it's in that movie.
Art
magazine.
Imitates life.
Yeah, no,
all right, before we go, Bill and I wanted to check in on, we've been watching Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Haven't had a chance to see it. How is it?
Well,
I don't think you've missed much. When you say I'm watching it, I watched the premiere and I watched half of the second one, and I was sort of underwhelmed.
I agree.
Wow.
I thought the first 3 episodes were like, you know, this is kind of a, it's forced. It's been 6 years.
I
think it was 6.
No, it was 9.
Well, whatever it is, it's been a lot of years since he last produced episodes. And I felt that it was not really working. It was forced. I felt that, you know, in the early seasons of Curb Your Enthusiasm, what worked for me was that Larry was never the antagonist. He was always reactive. Like, in other words, Larry
right.
would be doing something, and he would act like Larry David, which was kind of endearing, but he was never the aggressor.
He was driving now
the plot. In the later seasons, including this season, he was picking the fights, which wasn't really as entertaining. It would be kind of like, if you watch and I'm serious, if you watch a Bugs Bunny cartoon,
mm-hmm.
you know, on any Bugs Bunny cartoon, Bugs Bunny's never going after anybody unless they bother him. If Elmer
he's
Fudd
always the victim
or
that
Sam,
gets revenge
right. so once
on
they start
else.
Fucking with Bugs Bunny, basically, then he gets back, you know what I'm saying? And that was what was great about Larry, the Curb Your Enthusiasm stuff, and there was a shift in there. Here's what I will say positively.
So it's not as good.
The fourth episode, mm-hmm. which just aired last week, I thought that was a very good episode.
And the fifth episode, which was shown to the press, so I wasn't invited to that
event.
The fifth, yeah. They showed him the first and the fifth. The fifth is a standalone that has nothing to do with the others.
Well,
that's
I
all
like
I know.
The fourth
and it's
episode,
supposed to be very funny.
I thought it was much reminiscent of the early
episodes. The firepower in Stars is, like, amazing. Like, everybody wants to be on this show because they've got all these
They've
cameos.
Got everybody. Well, Larry David knows everybody, and he's putting everybody in there. And everybody.
Do you think they'll do a season...
I think that. So anyway, I would predict not. I was just. I don't.
Because 10 would round it off, though, Bill.
Well, it's not. There's not 10 seasons.
You mean
oh, it's
three.
Not 10 seasons. Yeah, how many
no.
seasons are there?
Two. This is the second.
Well, this is not
what
the second
talking?
Season.
Yeah,
this is,
well, I think of everything else as like the first season.
There's six seasons of Curb Your Enthusiasm. What the hell are you talking
about? But they did it kind of seamlessly. They did
no,
it all. They did it all at once.
No, they didn't.
That. That's not true.
Completely not true. It was six seasons over like 8 or 9 years.
There you go.
I know. I'm kidding.
And the one,
so easy.
One season
you flustered him. Look at him. He's red.
One season
like
centers around the sign.
I'm pretty sure
beginning.
It's just one season. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I see you fucking with me. All right. Next week on the show. Oh, do we have a good?
You really get
do we have
skin.
A good?
Do we? It's creepy
oh
under there. Let
God,
me tell you.
What we're going to talk about next
I think
week.
Thor comes out next week.
Yes.
Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, by the way, I
have no
on demand right now is King Arthur, which I watched last night with my wife. I got to say.
Clever, witty, funny.
Yeah, and
big elephants.
Full of
action,
it's made
a,
big
CGI.
Elephants. It's made, that's kind of weird. But it's made 160 yeah. so or 70 million bucks.
Yeah.
And I liked it. I liked it.
All right.
Yeah, well, it's on demand. We didn't talk about
week,
what's on
in
demand.
In addition to Thor, Ragnarok. Yeah, that just rolls off your... okay, we've got LBJ.
Yeah.
Which is opening.
Somebody saw it. Somebody told us that they saw it, and they said it was really good.
Bill Bergoli saw
it. Rob Reiner finally has a hit.
We'll be talking about that.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about...
What would Bugs Bunny think of LBJ?
I don't know, Doc. Lady Bird, which is the...
One of the
so
best movies of the year.
For next week.
Favorite movie
is,
of 2017 for me.
Directorial debut of the lovely actress Greta Gerwig.
She was there when we saw it.
She was there.
You know, we've also have next week a movie called Last Flag Flying, which...
I heard that was a flat. That was with Steve Carell.
Steve
Carell.
Bryan Cranston.
Supposed
Lawrence
to be very much
right.
like The Last Detail. And I'm not sure it is.
And that's opening next week as well. So we have a lot to talk about. And Bill Bergoli has an interview with...
if all goes well, yes. We'll see.
With
Gilbert Gottfried.
Gilbert Gottfried.
A friend of mine.
And they are good friends, but will he be his worst critic?
Bill and I both saw the documentary called Gilbert, and we'll be talking about that as well. And we're going to talk about one of Bill Bergoli's best friends is Gilbert Gottfried, and he speaks
that says a lot about
I'm
me.
I'm stunned. Isn't that what I just said?
A lot of time. like constantly. Like, every night they speak. And I'm going to probe into that relationship.
You want to talk about? Hey,
Bill is the little parrot on his shoulder.
If you don't mind, I'd like to plug my podcast episode coming out this week.
Not this week, but maybe next time. So listen, that's all the time we have.
Yeah. So basically, I'm not sure if you guys heard the story of a Latino actor, a telenovela actor, who was on a red carpet and slapped the living hell out of a red carpet reporter.
No.
Just slapped him silly. And
what?
So now he's
really?
Being sued. So we got Arthur Cade, who's probably one of the preeminent red carpet reporters
he's
right now.
He's the reporter
that slapped? No. He's someone else who will be talking about... how red carpets are being treated and the abuse that they take and sort of that culture of red carpet reporters.
Well,
so I
was
think
this
it'll be
guy
very
a punk guy? Was he like one of the... There's somebody that... Remember the guy who was known for pulling pranks on the red carpet?
Oh, yeah. Will Smith got kissed by some guy. Tom Cruise
got the water sprayed at him. And that was the same guy, I think.
Bill
that was
and Jack, having all of us have... And Bill, having done... All of us having done red carpets...
At one point,
and having done junkets, which is a different environment where you're not going...
Oscars
like Tom, over here, where you get your little 5 minutes and you sit down. What do you prefer? I know that the television prefers to look at a red carpet because it's glitzier and you get the light. But just in terms of a journalist, we've all done them. What do you prefer? Do you prefer
neither
an interview? On?
Neither. I prefer. And here's what I do.
If somebody
said
you can get Brad Pitt, but we can give him to you on the red carpet, or you can get him in a junket situation, which would
if
you
I had the only option of doing both, I'd what? Probably go for the junket. Because,
I'd go for the junket
because it's a direct one-on-one that you get with him, even if it's 3 minutes. The problem with the red carpets is they're always late. And by the time that the big star comes in, they whisk him away, and there's
and
a full line.
If you're at the
line,
end of that red carpet,
screwed.
I know.
Well,
and you're,
okay, I got a different opinion.
What would you choose?
I'd take the red carpet because I know it's going to get on the air. I don't know the junket's going to get on the air.
Really?
Yeah. Well, first of all, when I did the, I did 12 Oscars in a row, I was live.
Well, so you were at the Oscars.
Yeah. That's, well, that's where there's a red carpet there. I don't know if you've been.
My question, no, Bill, is
I would pick a red carpet because it feels newsier. It's like Al Gore talking to me on the red carpet
where
or something.
Where do you think? But if
that is true, there's newsier.
I guarantee you that one of those two would go on the air. Just in terms of what would you prefer? Would you prefer the sit-down environment of the junket or the standard?
I'll tell you that from a celebrity standpoint, they're looking forward to whatever they're there for the red carpet for. They're not looking forward to the junkets.
Bill Bregoli, what would you pick?
I go for the junkets. If it's a round table, it's okay. It's 20 minutes with the talent.
Yeah, I know. Those are great.
But you're also along with 12 other people, 10 of whom.
And you get to ask me one question.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that's why I prefer the podcast.
They
give you 15 to 20 minutes for an interview for podcasting.
Well, a podcast is completely
different.
So you
get to talk to them for 20 minutes.
Kind of the way we've been talking to this audience for the last hour.
Right. Okay. So anyway, next week, we're going to have a lot of stuff, as I mentioned. So for Bill Bregoli.
Yes, sir.
And Jack Rico from
the Highly Relevant Podcast.
And No More Showbiz Cafe, Jack?
Yeah, but, you know, I don't want to squeeze both of them in there. Just
all right.
One.
That's smart marketing. Sorry, we brought the other one up.
And Bill McCuddy.
From the Irrelevant Podcast.
I'm Neil Rosen. And as always, what do we do here, Bill?
I have no idea, and I'm sure the audience doesn't either after listening to this.
I think we watch
the bad stuff so you don't
have
to.
That's right, we do. And I'm Neil Rosen. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us, and we'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.